وعلى آله الطيبين الطاهرين المعصومين. The word تربيت or تربية is defined as literally in the dictionary as raising something or making something grow to reach its potential. Now, in terminological sense, how we use it in akhlaq and in Islam, it is defined as a training or raising something to reach the purpose that it has been created for. It has been made for. So first of all, when we look at this word tarbiyat, which is used, for example, raising children, you use the word tarbiyat. Or raising a people or a community. It's meant for all of these things. So this word that's used, really, its meaning is gotten from the fact that there is a purpose at the outset. There's a goal at the outset. And when a person makes something grow or reach that goal, then it means that he was successful in his tarbiyat. So first the goal has to be set. And then you make the plan of making this thing or this person reach that goal. This is what tarbiyat is. So, when we look at a teacher or a trainer or a parent, good parents or good teachers are those who have effective ways of raising their students or their children or their community to reach the goal that they have in mind. You might be surprised that some people may not have good goals, may not have a good purpose for raising a community or students or children, but they are good teachers. They're good parents. For example, you see that this parent wants his son to be an atheist. And he is so good of a trainer that he makes him an atheist. So this person is a good murabbi. He's a good trainer. But for the wrong purpose. Many mu'mineen we see, their goals are very good. They want their children to be good people. They want their children to be good believers. They want their children to be pious, but they are bad trainers. And hence you see that they never, or they are not able to, make their children reach the purpose that they have for them. So you see, that doesn't mean that their goals were wrong or their purpose was incorrect. What it means is that they just had bad and ineffective ways of training their children. A teacher, for example, might have lofty ideals and might have great ideas for his students. But because he's a bad teacher, he doesn't have effective ways to make him grow. That's why you see that many mu'mineen are bad parents and many kuffar are good parents. The kuffar make their children grow up to be strong kafirs. And that was their purpose. So they are good murabbi, they are good trainers. They know how to get across their ideas and translate them to their children. The same way, for example, parents, when they look at themselves, good mu'mineen, when they look at themselves, their ideals might be good, but because their ways are ineffective, they do not have good methods of trying to translate their values to their children. So what happens is that they are unable to raise them up in the way they intended. So The weakness is not in their goals or purpose. The weakness is in the method of their training. The method of their training. So now, when Allah wants to raise a community and a nation, when Ahlul Bayt want to train a mu'min and a believer, what is their goal? What is the outset hypothesis that they have that this is what I want this to become? You see, this is something to understand, and then we will see that have we reached that goal that they had in mind, and what is the ways and methods that they have used. And then out of those methods that they use, there is one method that is, of all the methods, the most effective. So first outset, what is the goal? So now let's send a salawat. If you all can move forward. Now obviously I'm just giving a premise for the subject that we are going to be talking about. This is just the premise so that you understand where this is going. And how Allah trains us, and how Allah raises us, and what methods that He uses in order to raise us. And are we now using those methods that Allah has used, or are we using some other methods that are ineffective in raising ourselves and our children and our students? This is what we need to recognize first. So my friends, again, tarbiyat requires purpose. If there is no purpose, then there is no plan of action to raise someone. And raising someone has to be effective. If it's ineffective, no matter how good the purpose is, it's not going to succeed. For example, I might start off by looking at a dish that I want to cook and say, you know what, I want to cook, let's say, biryani. Right? I start off with that purpose. Now what ended up, the result was nothing like a biryani. Right? So obviously, you know, the weakness was not in my purpose. My purpose was very lofty. Right? But the weakness was in the recipe or the way that I did it. See, the weakness is in the method. And hence, this is where Allah not only gives us a purpose, but also shows the method by which we can reach that purpose. So what is the purpose that Allah set for mankind? The goal that Ahlul Bayt have for mankind is to reach the state of obedience and nearness to Allah. This is their purpose. This is what Allah wants from you, to really reach Him, because that's where our pleasure is. That's where our fun lies. That's where our enjoyment is, with Allah, the Creator, by being close to Him. That's the purpose. Now, how does He make us go there? What methods has Allah used in order to make us reach Him? So when we look at the Quran and Islam, you see there are certain methods Allah used. Now I'm going to just go over some of them today, and then we will end up somewhere. And this is just an introduction to the subject. So let's send the salawats. There are many methods that Allah has used in the Quran and in Islam and in history of mankind to raise man and to give him his message and to bring people closer to his message. The first method, for example, that Allah used, the prophets used, is inzar, warning. They warned people about the consequences of their action. And they made them fear death, the grave, or hellfire. This is one method that Allah uses and speaks of in the Quran, and also the prophets have used. They are nadir. Nadir means a warner. Someone who comes to warn you of the consequences of your actions, of the bad actions that you do. This is a method of tarbiyat. This is a method of growth, you know, of making someone grow. When you scare them, make them understand that if you do this, the consequences are detestable. It's hard on you. It's bad for you. And this, at the outset, yes, it is an effective method of rectifying anyone. If you scare them enough, you will see that. Whether it's children or students or even people. If you make a person recognize death and say that, listen, you know, you're going to die, you're going to go to your grave. You are going to go before Allah. You will be responsible for your actions and accountable for what you have done. So this is a method. Look at it. Right away, it puts in a sense of responsibility. It does that. This is one method that Allah uses in the Quran. Another method that He has used is basharat, giving good news, or offering incentives and gifts, making you understand that, listen, if you do good, then there's rewards for you. Reward, like for example, pleasure. A good outcome, peace, jannat. All of these are what? This is Allah's way of offering incentives in order to make you come closer to Him. It's a method that the prophets and the imams have used also. And they have said that, listen, you know, Allah is giving you this offer. With every action that you see or any ziyarat or anything that you mention, you see people ask, so what is the ajr for this? You see, ajr is mentioned as an incentive. So now what happens is that when the ajr is mentioned, right away we're like, alhamdulillah, you know, that's good. If I do this, I get this much reward. I mean, anyone, as naturally, we want that. We want to work less and get more. Right? Everyone wants it. You know, I mean, no one wants to work more and get less. If there is someone like that, then you can meet me afterwards for counseling. But right now, we're talking about normal people. Right? Normal people or intelligent man or person wants to work less and get more out of the work that he does. So if he can work 1 hour and get, you know, $20, he would rather take that than work 1 hour and get $10. If you have the offer to do what, you will choose this. So naturally, you see, we want more for what we do. And that's why Allah, when He gives offers, His offers are very lucrative. They are lucrative. For example, if you pray alone, then you get such and such a reward for prayer. But if you pray in jama'at, with 10 people in the jama'at, in prayers and congregation, your reward is unlimited. Infinite. Now, where is one reward and where is infinite? You see, so obviously a person is now inclined to pray in jama'at. This is a natural inclination that Allah is using to train you, to do tarbiyat for you. This is another way that Allah has used in the Quran. A third way that we see that Allah uses a method to train us or to do tarbiyat is by appealing to our nature, to our fitrat, to our conscience. You see, Allah, you know, has used this method. As an example, for example, He says in Surah Hujarat, He says, أَيُّهِبُّ أَحَدَكُمْ أَنْ يَأْكُلَ لَحْبَ أَخِيهِ مَيْتًا فَكَرَحْتَمُوهُ He says, does any one of you want to eat the dead flesh of your brother? You know, I mean, flesh of your dead brother, you know. For example, if your brother has died and he's lying down and you're ready to put him in the ground, would you say that, okay, let me take off a pound and, you know, make lunch with it. How would that sound? Is it like, you know, I mean, do you feel disgusted? That's it, right? Allah is appealing to this. This is our nature. He's appealing to that. Don't backbite others because that's what it means. Don't talk bad about others because that's what it means. Your mu'min brother, don't talk bad about him. Because this is what it means. You're eating his flesh while he's dead. So now what happens is that this appeals to our nature, our fitrat. Then he says, فَكَرَحْتُمُوهُ. Oh, you hate that, don't you? You hate that, don't you? Yes, we do. Well, then why are you doing this? You see, he's appealing. This is an appeal to our nature, our fitrat. This is a method that Allah uses in order to do tarbiyat of us, make us grow closer to Him. These are all what? Methods of tarbiyat, my friends, Allah is using in the Quran and Ahlul Bayt have used. Another method that Allah uses in the Quran is that of a role model. Of a role model. He says, لَقَدْ كَانَ لَكُمْ فِي رَسُولَ اللَّهِ أُسْوَةٌ حَسَنًا. In Rasulullah is the best example for you. Look at Rasulullah. He is your hero. He is your role model. Look at him. Look at Ahlul Bayt. They are your role model. You see, my friends, having an example makes us want to be like him. Having a role model and choosing a role model, you see, makes us follow that role model. Hero worship is very important. Hero worship is very important. Having heroes is very important. Having examples in front of you that you can look at and get inspired by is very important in a human life, in a life of any community, in the life of any nation. A nation that doesn't have heroes, that doesn't have examples or role models, is a dead nation. It's a nation that is dead. You can go there and see that, any nation that doesn't have. That's why every nation looks for their best examples that they have produced and makes an image of them and keeps them ahead of them and says that these are the examples that we follow. These are the role models that we have. The best people that have come out of their society, they would make them an example. And say that, wow, this is the example. That's why you see Allah knew that anyone who wants to be raised and who wants to grow needs examples. That's why the Anbiya, the Ahlul Bayt, are the examples which inspire us to become better. Your idea, just you I'm talking about, you having the example of Ahlul Bayt in front of you is what's going to make you get inspired. Just by looking at, you know, how Imam Ali used to pray. When you hear the fact that when Imam Ali prayed, he was shaking in awe of Allah. You look at that example and say, wow. Maybe I can feel like that someday. Maybe I can someday have a feeling like that. You see, just that. This is the example. This is the method of tarbiyat. Allah is using this. Yes, these are all methods of tarbiyat I'm talking about that are in the Quran. And we have used it. You read it in books of akhlaq and books of tarbiyat. You read these examples. But now, when all of these are taken into account, my friends, now let me come to my topic. Now we come to our topic. When you look at all these methods of tarbiyat, there's one method that is usually overlooked, mostly ignored, not spoken of, and not written about as much as it should be. One method of tarbiyat that Allah uses and Ahlul Bayt have used that is more effective than any of these methods. Warning people and scaring them hey, you know, prophet tried that. You know, where did it lead him? Giving them the incentives of jannats and hurul een, you know, everyone's imagination is filled with imagination of hurul een. But they'd rather take the hurul een in dunya. Right? There you go, you know. So all the offers that are made, really, with one of those things that Allah offered in Jannah, really, we don't understand it. If we do understand it, we would leave everything here, right? But no, it didn't work. It wasn't effective. Allah tried it. It's not as effective. Yes, it has a role and it played a role, but it's not as effective. Or appealing to our conscience and our nature. Effective to an extent, but not much. Or, for example, a role model. Providing a role model. Ahlul Bayt are the role model. My friends, Ahlul Bayt are your role model. Imam Ali is your role model. How much has Imam Ali being your role model affected you in your life? Has it stopped you from doing things that you would be embarrassed to do in front of others? Has it stopped you from anything or making changes in your life? A little bit, maybe. I want you to see it. You know, it's easy to say, Alhamdulillah, we have the example of Ahlul Bayt. You know, okay, how much of their example has affected you in your life? We steal from others, we deceive others, we lie to others, we cheat, you know, doing all kinds of crazy things. Right? Did they teach you that? Did they show you that? Did they describe that to you? Was it in any part of their role model that you have that? No. So then what happened? The role model of Ahlul Bayt is a method, but not that effective. Wow. So what is that one method that is so effective? And if we can just pay attention to that, it is the most effective way of tarbiyat that Allah uses and He wanted us to use in doing tarbiyat of ourselves and our children and our students and our community. What is that method, my friends? This is where we come to the most effective method of tarbiyat. This is the topic that we want to talk about. You know, really, a lot of us, when we raise our children, do all those things. You know, we threaten them, you know, we ground them, time out, or for example, we give them incentives. Right? I'll buy you this, I'll get you that. We do all of that. Or for example, even role model. For example, I have known some parents, for example, who say, hey, Maulana, in our young days, we used to do all kinds of crazy things, parties and everything. So what happened now? Oh, we had children. So what did that do? Oh, we have to become role models for them. So the only reason you stopped is because you want to be a role model for your children. Has it worked? You see, what happened is that this is a method that we use. People use this. It makes them do things. It makes them make changes in their lives. You see, we use this method. But that one method really, unfortunately, is not written as much in books. If you read the books of Akhlaq, if you read the books of Tarbiyat, you will see that it's not that much written about it. And that's the unfortunate thing. Why didn't they write more about it? Which, this being the most effective method. And it's not going to come that easy. So send a salawat. This is the method, my friends, this method that Allah uses, is this method that Allah uses by showing us how much He loves us. Yes. Not asking you to love Allah. No. You see, that's not the method. You know, Allah didn't say, you know, you need to love me and love Ahlul Bayt. No, that's not the method. Loving Ahlul Bayt is not the method of tarbiyat. And this is where people don't understand. You know, people are simple-minded. Alhamdulillah, they just heard, oh, love Ahlul Bayt, which is good. Of course we love Ahlul Bayt. But that's not the method of tarbiyat that Ahlul Bayt used. See that? They didn't use that tarbiyat. They didn't use that method. They didn't say, love us and you'll be okay. Not, for example, that you love each other and through that love you will become better. Allah didn't say that if you love Ahlul Bayt, you'll become better. He didn't say that. Yeah. He said, love Ahlul Bayt. And we never understood what that meant. Really, we didn't understand what that meant. And this is where we, if we can understand this, and today I just want to point this out as an introduction to the topic, to the subject that we are discussing, so that we can understand this eloquence that Allah speaks of and the method that He uses and Ahlul Bayt have used. It's not loving Ahlul Bayt, it's knowing how much Ahlul Bayt loved you. This is the method of tarbiyat, my friends, that is so effective that it can make anyone change his life and make him do things that he is incapable of doing. It is the method of tarbiyah that can make you reach greatness, make you reach your purpose, make you reach the goal that has been intended for you. This is the method. You don't love Allah, Allah loves you. You don't love Ahlul Bayt, Ahlul Bayt love you. This is the method, la ilaha illallah. Allah loves you or He doesn't love you is the method of tarbiyah that Allah chose. Just like when parents, you know, tell their little children, you know, their little two-year-old, three-year-old toddlers, they tell them, you know, when the mother tells that child, you know, I don't like it when you do that. I'm going to get upset. Just that little statement to that child is so heavy, so crushing. Mom's going to get upset. I'm going to get in trouble. Or if that mother says, you know, if you do this, I will love you. Right then, you see, she's going to love me. She's going to love me, you know. You see, this incentive. She is going to love me. Not that I am going to love her. She loves me or she does not love me. This is the method, my friends. If a person recognizes that, if a parent or a father and mother, if you see them telling their child, okay, you know what? You be quiet and I'm going to get you a candy. If you don't bother me, if you don't mess around, I will take you out for a treat. If you hear statements like that, the question to be asked is that what has gone wrong with your relationship with your children? Don't you have a relationship with them that you have to offer them this? If you had a relationship, then all you need to say is that I don't like it when you do that. And if the child is not listening to that, or if your child has gone away from that, it means that there is no relationship. Or that relationship has been damaged. Now you're understanding this. What it means. How does this come off? My friends, when there's a relationship, really, all Allah has to say is that I don't like it when you do that. And that's enough to crush my world. You know, to make me feel so distressed that Allah's not going to like me if I do this. That is going to affect how I live. La ilaha illallah. How far can I go? Let me just go to the ending right now. Right? Let me take you all the way to the conclusion, to the ending. Right? And I'll just point that out to you. And inshallah, whatever comes in between, we will discuss that in these days that are going to come. In Dua-e Kumail, Imam Ali makes an... an apparently illogical statement. An absurd statement. Maybe you haven't noticed it. But let me just say it to you. He says, O Allah, sabartu ala adhabik. I will tolerate your adhab. My friends, who can tolerate Allah's azab? It's an impossibility. Tolerate Allah's azab? Allah, you know, Imam Ali is saying that, sabartu ala adhabik, I will tolerate your azab. I mean, it's impossible. If Allah punishes you and chastises you in the hellfire, it is impossible for you to bear. There is no way that you can bear that, handle that. There's no way anyone can handle that. But look at the statement Imam Ali is making. He says, I will tolerate your punishment, your hellfire, your adhab, فَكَيْفَ أَصْبِرُ عَلَىٰ فِرَاكِكَ. But how can I tolerate you being away from me? Imam Ali is taking a very high road here to give an analogy, a disparity, a difference between something that is impossible, which is the azab of Allah, tolerating the azab of Allah, and tolerating separation from Him. It means that Allah, your azab hypothetically speaking, even though it's an impossibility, could be tolerated, but being away from you can never be tolerated. Separation from you cannot be tolerated. You see how he's teaching us that the method of tarbiyat of Allah's love is greater than anything else. He's pointing out the method of tarbiyat here. Allah, this idea of you being upset at me, you being away from me, you being separated from me, this is harder than your azab. This is more difficult to handle. This, my friends, is the way, the method. La ilaha illallah. The highest form of training in tarbiyat, the most effective way of doing tarbiyat is knowing the love of Allah. Understanding that Allah loves you, Ahlul Bayt love you. Some people say that, they don't do things or they stay away from things by saying that my conscience doesn't allow me. You know, not that I'm following certain rules or something, my conscience doesn't allow me. As if they're thinking that this is the ultimate argument. My conscience, allow me. No, there's a much better method of not doing things or doing things. It is to know if Allah loves you or not. If Allah loves you for doing it, or if Allah doesn't love you for doing it. This is the better way. I'll just leave it at that. Just leave it at that. I'll ask a question that I have no answer for. Right? How much does Allah love you? Maybe a child can give an answer. This much, That's a very good hadith, right? that Allah loves you more than 70 times. But you get this. He says more than. How much more? He did not mention. Right? In those days, Arabs could only count up to 70. But you see that more than that. More than that is infinite. How much? I don't know. There's no way to prove it. There's no way to establish that fact. Let's make it something simple. How much does Imam Zamana love you? La ilaha illallah. There's no way to prove it. How much do they love you? My friends, if we can get this point, how much Allah loves you and how much Imam Zamana loves you, then that's all we need. Nothing. We don't need anything else, no other majlis. We can all go back home. Right? We'll stop it right here. In fact, if we can get this right, I'm telling you, then the Imam will be with us. If you can get just this one point, how much does Allah and Imam Zamana love you? How much do they love you? How many of you know that Imam Hussein loves you on this first night of Muharram? Do you get it? Are you still in the mode of thinking that you want to do something, you want to show something, you want to cry so that he can love you? Why don't you understand that Imam Hussein already loves you? Why is it taking longer for us to understand that? This feeling of warmth that you have in your heart right now, the rising of your emotions that you have right now, tears swelling in your eyes, the feeling of love for Fatima's son, this feeling that you have right now, what, you think it's you? Do you really think that this feeling that you have right now of wanting to shed tears, this emotion that is swelling up in your chest, waiting to burst out, and that you will show, and that you will cry, and that you will shed your tears, and you will beat your chest. Do you think that this is you? This is because of you? No, this is because of a man and his family who are lying on the desert of Karbala without any kafan or shroud, and their only fault is that they have fallen in love with you. The only guilt is that they have fallen in love with you. It's because of them. It's Hussein who loved us. How many of us get this? How many of us get this? You know, just like how it means for a son, just like how it means for a son or a child to feel crushed when his mother tells him, "I don't like you." Just like how it feels for a child when his mother tells him that how I love you, you see his world, it's everything. It means everything in the world for him. That's how we should feel about Ahlul Bayt. When Ahlul Bayt say, "I love you," it should mean the world to us. If they say that "I don't love you," then it should crush our world. This is what it means, my friends. How many of us get that? Really, don't lose your childhood. Don't grow up. Really, don't grow up. That's where we lose this idea of love. The only thing that has changed from our childhood till now are our parents.
At one time, it was our biological parents that were there, and we used to feel their love or their hate. Now those parents have changed. Now they are our spiritual parents. Now it's our spiritual parents. It's the Imam of the time. It's Imam Hussein. It's Bibi Fatima. When we look at them now, when they say, I love you, imagine how much does that mean? Do we get this? Let's think about this in these 10 days that we have. Think about this point. Think about this issue for these 10 days. We'll go over these things in these 10 days. You know, I saw someone when I was in Karbala. I saw someone at the grave of Imam Hussein, and there was a lot of rush there, and he was being crushed in the rush. And he was at the Zari, he was at the grave itself holding on, he was crushed and he was crying. He was crying so hard. He was crying so hard, he was hiccuping, he was coughing, and he was crying and crying. I went close to him. As I came close to him, I heard him say things. You know what he was saying? He says, no, Hussein, no. Please, no, Hussein. Hussein, why did you die, Hussein? You shouldn't have died. Hussein, you shouldn't have died. Let me die in your place. You shouldn't have died. You see, this is that person, a person who's feeling Hussein is loving him. Hussein is loving him. You know, when Imam Hussein sent Muslim ibn Aqil, and when he sent Muslim ibn Aqil, Imam chose him for certain reasons. I mean, Imam, you know, really, by choosing him shows how important Muslim ibn Aqil was for Imam Hussein, you know. He sent him off and he said that, go to Kufa, and these people, they want to support me. So go and see their support, if it's real or not, go there. Imam Hussein knows, but he sent Muslim ibn Aqil. Muslim ibn Aqil went, he hired two guides to show him the way in the desert. And these two guides that were with him, on the way, they died. They died because of the hardships of the path and this and that. Not too far away. They didn't go even that far and they died. And after a long struggle, Muslim ibn Aqil came back to Imam Hussein. Came back to Imam Hussein and said, Mawla, Master, my Master, this is hard. This journey, it's a bad omen, you know. These people died and, you know, I was stuck and I came back. This is difficult. This task that you gave me is too much for me. This task that you gave me is too hard for me. Give it to maybe someone else who's better than me. Maybe I'm not the one to do this. Maybe I'm too weak to do this. Maybe I'm incapable. Hussein, choose someone else, Hussein. Choose someone else. Don't choose me. Maybe I'm not the one. You know, Hussein, when he heard this from Muslim ibn Aqil, showing his inability or his excuse for not going, said something to Muslim ibn Aqil. He said something to Muslim ibn Aqil that truly changed him, changed Muslim in such a way that after that, Muslim ibn Aqil never looked back. You know what Imam Hussein said to him? You know these words that he said to him? Pay attention to these words. You know what he told Muslim ibn Aqil that made him so strong, that made him so mighty, that now after that, Muslim did not turn back. You know what Imam Hussein said? He said, Muslim, I love you. I love you, Muslim, and I rely on you. I depend on you. When Imam Hussein said these words of love to Muslim ibn Aqil, now Muslim after that was so inspired. Muslim after that became so strong that after that he never turned back or never looked back. He stood firm until his last moment. Hussein, do that with us on the first night of Muharram. Hussein, aren't you going to come to us and say, I love you? Aren't you going to tell us that you love us? We
You don't need to hear it. My friend Susanna is already telling you, I love you. If that is not enough for us, maybe if we heard him say that, maybe if we understood how Hussein is saying, I love you to you, then probably by Ashura we would also die with Hussein. You know someone else that Hussein said this to? You know maybe someone else that Hussein said this to, you would be, you know him. Someone else, Hussein showed and expressed these words of love in such a way that made him so crazy and love struck that he stood by Hussein until the end. He said, Abbas, my Abbas. Habibi Abbas. My beloved Abbas, when Hussein said that, Abbas, now we see where Abbas went. You see, Ya Abbas everywhere. Two people, Hussein left here and he showed and he expressed his love for them. One was Muslim ibn Aqil, one was Abbas ibn Ali. Two of them, and both of them have left a reminder for us. Abbas has left his flag with us that we hold up. The alam of Abbas is the flag that Abbas has left in memory of the love of Hussein. And this Muslim ibn Aqil, you know what he has left behind? When he was ordered to be killed and they were going to cut off his head, at that last minute Hussein, Muslim ibn Aqil was crying, and he was not crying because he was going to die or he was going to get beheaded. The only reason he was crying is that, Oh my Hussein, I have written you to come over here. I have asked you to come here, but you are coming in the middle of fiends. You are coming in the middle of demons. The one thing Muslim then said that has remained behind after that, Assalamu alayka ya Aba Abdullah.
سَيَعْلَمُ الَّذِينَ ظَلَمُوا أَيَّ مُنْقَلَبٍ يَنْقَلِبُونَ. Ya Mahmud bihaqi Muhammad, Ya Allah bihaqi Ali, Ya Fatir al-Samawad bihaqi Fatima, Ya Muhsin bihaqi Hassan, Ya Qadim al-Hassan bihaqi Hussein. Allah, give us the tawfiq to be on the right path.